This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Without any further delays, I'd like to call on Dr. Roberts, our Chief of Service, to come and present you our outcome data from UCSF and other news that pertain to our service. John?
Well, thank you, Flavio. Once again, Flavio has arranged not only a wonderful meeting, but great weather to go along with it and a nice drive up, and so we're all happy to be here. So I'd like to also thank Peggy Millar, who's really the one who has organized this thing for, I don't know, is this the 20th year? How many years have we been doing this? 20 years now. And Peggy's been has done everything. And she's kind enough to work with our sponsors to get educational grants to support the meeting. And those are Novartis, Astellas, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Genentech, Alexion, Amgen, Sanofi, and Questor have been kind enough to support the meeting for this year. It takes a village to make a transplant service run, and we've got a lot of people that from both surgery, nephrology, and pediatric nephrology that help us doing it. Dr. Stock, just as you can see the stars by that name, he's rolling in as the ASTS president, which will make him even scarcer than usual to find. You know, between mountain climbing and climbing the ASTS mountains, he's going to be out there. So in terms of the pre-transplant nurse coordinators, they're broken out in sort of areas. They sort of support different areas, deceased donor, living donor, outreach and evaluation. And so when you have an issue, you'll frequently have the nurses call you guys up and to ask you about one of the patients. Particularly when we have an organ, we always try to get hold of the nephrologist to make sure that the patient's otherwise doing well. The post-transplant clinic takes a lot of effort. We have nurse practitioners both in pediatric, the post-transplant kidney inpatient, and in the pancreas transplant. Nancy Fong-Hom has supported the inpatient service for a very long time, and it's always great to have a whole group of people that are taking care of the post-transplant patients. We have a lot of people that help support the patients in terms of getting things done. Amy Peel, Helen Christensen, and Melissa are all here today, and you can meet them. We have our social workers and financial counselors that are important to our progress with the transplant program. Well, unfortunately, Dr. Tomljanovic is going to be retiring in June of 2015. He managed to get him to stay one more year. I know he said he was going to leave this year, last year, and this year, next year, we'll be saying he'll leave one more year, but I don't think so. And Amy Peel who's been the manager, is going to be retiring in a month, as she keeps telling us. She's retiring in a month, and we're looking hard to find people to fill both of those shoes. And I think we've interviewed 10 people looking to fill Steve's job, and I think we're on our fifth looking for Amy's job. So we're really casting a broad net, and I know we're going to come up with good people, but not as good as they've been. So just in terms of the what we've been doing, as you know, our wait list is still large, over 5,000 people on it. We have, actually a substantial portion of the entire wait list in the United States. For the people on the wait list, our expected mortality is really no different than our observed mortality, and that has to do with, you know, all you folks who take care of these patients while they're on dialysis for that, you know, 7 years while it takes them to get up to work their way up to the top of the waiting list. In terms of the numbers, you can see we've had some increase in a number of our living donor transplants are deceased donor transplants have slowly drifted down, and that's, you know, obviously dependent on the regional organ supply. So we've managed to stay with a total number of transplants that are about the same, but it's really been because we've been having an increase in the living donor as we've sort of seen this fall off and the number of deceased donor organs available. We list about 1,000 patients every year, and that's a lot of people. But if you go back to this slide and see that we transplant about 350, you can see they're really only transplanting about 35% of those 1,000 people. So a 1 in 3 chance of you getting a transplant. And if you don't have a living donor, you got about 1 in 5 chance of receiving a deceased donor transplant. The rest of those patients either die, become too sick to transplant, or remain inactive on the wait list for issues like obesity. If you're a diabetic, you have a 1 in 10 chance of getting a deceased donor transplant, so pretty miserable statistics. And I met with, you know, I did 6 evaluations on Wednesday morning of patients, and this is the story I gave every single one of them, that this is kind of, you know, you're diabetic, you got a 1 in 10 chance if you don't have a living donor, and it's, you know, 1 in 5 if you aren't diabetic. So it's pretty miserable stuff to be telling our patients, but we're just telling them, you know, if you can find a living donor transplant, that's really your best option while on the waiting list, because you're unlikely to get transplanted if you just wait a long period of time. Transplant still with great survival in terms of, you know, we have a 98% basically 1 year survival, patient survival after transplant, about a 94% graft survival. we're doing pretty well, and really not much as that has changed over a long period of time. So, you know, transplant has better survival statistics, and for patients who are listed but remain on dialysis. So a couple things are going to change. There's going to be a new allocation system for kidney transplantation, and this is going to affect your patients. And what it really is that instead of time on the waiting list, it's going to be the amount of time that they've been on dialysis. So a patient who, say, got referred late or made up their mind late that they wanted to get a transplant, it doesn't matter anymore. Well, in the end, when this new allocation system starts, it won't matter anymore that they're what day they came to us and what day we listed them. It really is what day they started on dialysis, and that will come from the CMS database. For those patients who are not on dialysis, it's when their GFR becomes below 20 that starts the clock, whether they've gone to get a evaluation for transplant or not. So I'm sorry, for the GFR less than 20, they have to have been registered, and then once their GFR is less than 20, they can start getting waiting time. You can't backdate their waiting time to a GFR less than 20. The other thing that's going to happen is that they're going to, different donors, deceased donors, provide different kidneys. So an older donor who's hypertensive, who died of a stroke, who has a creatinine over 1.5, those kidneys don't last as long as a donor who's 20-year-old from a car accident or a gunshot wound to the head. If you look at the comparable outcome of those kidneys, that best kidney probably has a 93%, say, 1 year survival, whereas if you look at that kidney from the older donor, sort of the worst kidneys in terms of outcome, they're running about 80% at 1 year. So there's a spectrum of kidneys available. And one of the things that is going to happen with this new system is there's going to be matching of those good kidneys with the best recipients. So the recipients who have sort of the highest post-transplant survival are going to get those best kidneys. And so the top 20% of the kidneys are going to go to top 20% of those patients on the waiting list. So those patients are going to jump in ahead of other patients who are waiting. So basically it's pretty much the younger patient, the non-diabetic patient, are going to have an advantage to getting transplanted with a better kidney ahead of the remaining 80% of the wait list. So it's really an attempt to match the most appropriate kidney to the most appropriate recipient. And so it's going to change a little bit of how we're getting patients ready for transplant. Though if a patient falls into that upper 20%, instead of they're not going to be waiting 7 years, they're probably waiting maybe a much shorter period of time. And so we're going to start working those patients up early. So you may hear, be surprised. Well, here's a patient's only been on the list 2 years, say, and we're already starting to work them up and telling them that they're going to get transplanted relatively soon, rather than, and you're going to have other patients who are 7 years on the waiting list and wondering, why is this other fellow jumping in front of me? And this is the change in the system. So that's really a younger patient's going to sort of be jumping ahead of the older patients, not completely based on age, but age plays an important part of it. Well, so we also had healthcare reform, and there's lots of different changes in terms of insurance, terms of co-pays, terms of patients being able to afford their immunosuppressive medications, and I think that's one of the changes that we're seeing in our clinic. There's sort of we're having to sort of look for different options for patients in order to particularly get their post-transplant medications paid for. Our social workers, our financial counselors are really helping us get patients before transplant, recognizing what their options are, and then after transplant, making sure that we can try and get them their immunosuppressive medication so that they can keep that kidney transplant. So as you saw from the beginning, our deceased donor numbers are going down across California, across the country. It's not clear exactly why that's happening, but sometimes it has to do with the economy. Nobody's, and we don't really have a good answer for why that is slowly decreasing. As we talked about earlier, the survival on the wait list is relatively poor, and living donation is going to be the best option for the patients. One of the problems is that you may have a living donor, but they're the wrong blood type, or that you have an antibody against their cells, and that would mean that they can't donate directly to you. So what we're doing is, with a lot of other centers in the country, we're exchanging kidneys. So if you have a pair that are incompatible, we can usually work out some plan where, your donor donates to somebody else, and the simplest matter, that donor who could donate to you donates to you, and so we have just a paired exchange. But these are, as you read in the paper, you can have 60, 70, 80 people in these getting transplanted in these big chains. We've performed 63 paired exchange transplants, and that's an option. So what we tell patients, if you have a living donor, don't worry if they're incompatible. We'll figure out a way to get you transplanted. So that's what we're really trying hard to do that. We're also doing some in-center exchanges where we can get sort of the whole system to work a little bit faster for patients that, say, may have a compatible donor but don't want to wait and go through the whole system of the National Kidney Registry, which takes a while to get those transplants facilitated. So the standard living donors are blood type compatible, cross match compatible, then donor and size, age and size matched. So sometimes it's easy to understand blood type incompatibility and cross match incompatibility, but there are, say, a young male who's on dialysis who's got his 60-year-old 5'1" mother who wants to donate to them, and that kidney, though, they're better off getting a kidney transplant from that living donor rather than waiting on the waiting list. That kidney may not last as long in that recipient as it might in a more age and size match recipient. But so there may be a pair where there's a strapping young man who's going to donate to his mother, and we can use a paired exchange in that situation to sort of match the outcomes of the kidneys with the outcomes of the recipients. And when you think about, not only do that, but then you may have five or six other pairs. We can tell the donors, you may not donate to your son, but you'll donate and your son will get a transplant, and you may help five other people get a transplant in one of these exchanges. And so that's what these types of exchanges are. They're sort of the simple ones where you go across, mother and husband are incompatible, and you exchange in this direction, or you have these chains where there's a UCSF recipient and getting a donor from, say, an altruistic donor, and then their donor donates to somebody at UCLA, and UCLA donates to University of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin goes back to UCSF. And so you can have sort of these chains that are really helping us use more of the living donor possibilities that are available. And so we talked about the small old donor with the large young recipient, and it just really, I think, is a way to sort of match the outcomes of the recipients to the donors. And the disadvantages is that sometimes it takes several offers to find get that transplant going, and some of the people that have a compatible pair just don't want to wait that long. So we're using the in-center one to sort of help us get those pairs turned over more quickly. The other program, this is changing the subject, is that Andy Posseld and his team have been doing total pancreatectomies for people with chronic pancreatitis, followed by auto islet infusion and transplant. So people that have chronic pancreatitis, their pain can be relieved by removing their entire pancreas. The problem is that leaves them diabetic. But you can take that pancreas out and isolate the islet cells and reinfuse them back into the recipient. And that allows the recipient to be pain-free and a non-diabetic. And so that's a new program that we've started sort of along the lines of our islet cell transplant. We've been doing islet cell transplants for a number of years, and this is sort of a different way to use the islet isolation techniques that we've developed at UCSF. I also like to remind you that for physicians and nurses, we have a symposium that's called this year, calling Riding the Waves of Change, and it's really a learning opportunity for particularly for nurses and physicians to learn about different aspects of transplantation, kidney, heart, liver, lung, the whole works. I'd like you all to enjoy the meeting. I know you will, and you'll enjoy Flavio's special seafood dinner tonight. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.